From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made on Saturday, May 28th at the Cincinnati Zoo in Cincinnati, Ohio. A mother was spending the day at the zoo with her four children, three girls and a three-year-old boy. Everyone around them said she was attentive and caring, but as any parent knows, wrangling children can be a challenge. And at one point, she was focused on the girls. In that instant, her toddler, the boy, took off, and he ended up getting into the gorilla enclosure. Now, inside the enclosure was a gorgeous creature, a 17-year-old gorilla named Harambe. The animal appeared startled and pulled the boy from the edge of the water inside the exhibit that's called Gorilla World. A zoo worker determined that the boy's life was in danger and made the decision to shoot and kill the animal. And as you might have heard, that sparked a backlash. On social media, the hashtag #JusticeForHarambe was trending. The mother of the boy received death threats, but police said there would be no charges for anyone, that this was an accident, that young children occasionally do dangerous things. The New York Times responded to the backlash with a piece about the way we tend to judge other parents. We scrutinize their choices, we assume the worst, and them and their kids. And so today we want to use this incident as the starting point in a discussion about how to improve parenting without making parents feel unfairly scrutinized, from birth to breastfeeding to basic child care to the way kids behave and more. And my guests come at this issue from a wide range of experience. And let me welcome them now. Sarah Treadwell is here, mother of three, a spiritual healer, and someone involved in, well, we'll be talking about that this hour. I'll just say hello. Welcome, mom of three.
Hi.
How are you, Sarah?
I'm great.
Your kids are how old?
My oldest is 16, and my son is going to be 4 this September, and my daughter is about 20 months.
Very good. Well, it's great to have you here. Patrick Boswell is here. Patrick's dad, a birth doula. He's a member of the Doula Cooperative of Rochester, an acupuncturist, among other things. And I was telling Patrick before the hour began, the first male birth doula I've met. You said you're one of only about 100 that you know of in the country, yeah?
Probably. There's not many of us. It tends not to be a field that men think about getting into.
Well, welcome. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Also here is Emily Horowitz. She's a mother of two. She's a psychotherapist, practitioner, and supervisor. She's the founder of Parenting Village, which is what, Emily?
Parenting Village is a nonprofit organization. We're in our fourth year now, and we were really created in order to offer very meaningful connection and crucial support to parents so that they can really offer the best of themselves to their children.
And how's it going?
It's going amazingly well. We're completely kind of volunteer, very grassroots and volunteer-based, and all of our program is really developed by volunteers, the board, and we're continuing to grow, so yeah.
Well, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Sally Parrott-Ashbrook is here. She's a mother, board-certified lactation consultant at Nourish Breastfeeding Support, which is what? What's that organization? You know, where are you through, Sally?
I'm a private practice lactation consultant. I have an office on University Avenue, and what it means to be in private practice is that I get to spend extended periods of time with clients when they need help. So I get 90 minutes in the first session and 60 minutes in follow-up. So we're able to go a lot more in-depth than other kinds of support that they tend to be able to get.
Well, thank you for being here as well.
Thanks.
And I'll start with the incident that sparked the discussion. Did anybody in this room look at that incident in Cincinnati and immediately think, what a terrible mom?
I'm going to guess that none of us in this room would say yes.
No.
In fact, I had a Facebook dialogue about this, and my first response was, yep, that would have been me. That absolutely could have been my
favorite. There before the
son.
Grace of God.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. I think that we try to create distance when tragedies happen between ourselves and that tragedy so that we can sort of feel as if we're safe and things like that won't happen to us. But, so much compassion for that mom.
I felt the same. And I mean, that was a gorgeous creature. I mean, no one wanted to see that outcome. But I felt the same. I mean, my son's 4. He's a little more risk averse than some of his friends. But I immediately thought that still could have been him, could have been me. I heard a lot of people saying, well, she was probably on her cell phone. And there's no evidence of that at all anyway.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it's amazing how fast people were assuming terrible things. Patrick, what did you think?
I definitely thought that it wasn't 100% her fault, that children climb, they jump, they get into places they're not supposed to. I was always just curious about the people around, like the other people, not her, but the other people. Like, I never heard anything about bystanders.
Noticing a boy jumping, getting ready to jump and go
mm-hmm.
over. Yeah, yeah.
And kind of creating that community, mm-hmm. you know, it's not necessarily her fault or mm-hmm. child's fault, but where was the community in that?
And this is a fair question, but man, kids can be fast. Yeah. You know, they can they can really move. Sarah, what did you think?
Yeah, I think I also was noticing about the people around, and I did hear about people saying, like, they had noticed she wasn't paying attention. They had noticed the kid was climbing. And I'm like, well, why didn't she go over?
Grab the kid.
I mean, I've been plenty of places, and I see a mom who's clearly doing something, or even if they're not distracted or whatever, like, there's a kid, go and help. You know, jump in, say, hey, are you okay? Or why don't I grab that for you? Or why don't I, come on, hon, climb down. You know, sometimes we just need to jump in and help each other. But I almost feel like there's such a culture of, I can't.
Like that's not my kid.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Why are you talking to my kid? Leave my kid. You know, yeah. That kind of culture that we've created. So a lot of people are afraid to step in and help another person's child or discipline them when they're doing something that isn't safe.
I think that's a great point. You guys agree that we have this distance now, that even when we're in public, if we see other children, it's like, well, that's not, first of all, that's not my responsibility. Or second of all, what would that parent say to me? I don't want to get in trouble with the parent. You guys feel that way?
Definitely. And I think that it's probably got to be harder for men, because there's this idea that men are going to kidnap the children and run. So if you see a man pulling your child off a fence, is he taking your child down or is he taking your child to run with it? It's not something I particularly worry about, but I know my husband is always like, should I or should I not step in when something is happening where he feels like maybe he should get involved?
Yeah. I mean, I think there is such a sense of just separateness between us, and particularly with parenting, that there's a fear of being judged and, a fear of sort of stepping on toes. I have a lot of friends who will say, I'm not going to intervene in this way or that, or might feel offended. I don't think we have a sense of collective responsibility for one another and for one another's children. And, you know, I feel like that's a significant part of the problem, that there's not this, we're not sort of feeling a sense of collective responsibility for each other.
You know, a lot of people who are on that Justice for Harambe hashtag, they wanted to know what, you know, the Jane Goodalls of the world said, and Jane Goodall herself weighed in, and she had a very interesting comment. She of course, is a leading primatologist, conservationist. She said, in this case, she believed the killing of Harambe, the gorilla, was justified under the circumstances, and to her, it actually highlighted the danger of zoo animals being in close proximity. In other words, to her, the question was, do we really need zoos, as opposed to, you know, let's judge the mom here.
Right.
I thought that was a very interesting response, and that's probably a whole separate conversation. But for those who were hoping she was going to say, yes, justice for Harambe, she said, it's probably justified in this case, and there's probably different questions we should be asking. I want to read another comment that came out of this, and the New York Times wrote about this. A woman named Mary Sheedy Kersinka, she's the author of Raising Your Spirited Child. And she wrote, quote, before you judge this mom, you have to remember that she may have taken every precaution. Some children are just wired differently, with a Lamborghini engine where most of us have a Chevy truck. Those are children who are more likely to react to their environment, to become highly stimulated, and to struggle with impulse control. They're high energy, they're intense, and they're very committed to their goals. Unfortunately, those goals may not be in line with those of their parents or caregivers. So I just thought that was interesting perspective there. And I haven't read that particular book, but I thought that was interesting perspective. So let's broaden it out here. In general, if we're going to do a more effective job supporting parents, what do we need to do? I'll kind of go around the table here, and then I want to start working into specific areas of your expertise. But let me kind of go around the table, and I'll start with Emily, the founder of Parenting Village. What can we do so parents are feeling more supported and we can feel safer as community members if we see a child that we think might be in danger or doing something they shouldn't, that I'm not going to parent your child, but I may help, or I may just notice this is a time that I can help. What can we do?
I mean, I think that what we can do is create the villages that we need. You know, I think that we can offer support in lots of different ways. I think that we can come from a place of compassion in ourselves. I think even when parents make choices that are perhaps, you know, less effective, or maybe somebody is really distracted or wasn't doing their best job at a moment, we all have those, and it doesn't serve to judge. It just doesn't, even if there was a true mistake at play. So I think really, honestly, what I think we can do is get really curious about our own selves, really focused on not so much what's happening around us, but sort of ourselves, and then curious, slow ourselves down a little, curious about what we're seeing around us. Who am I, sort of, who am I as a parent? Where did I come to the beliefs that I have? And then, you know, who is this person next to me? Who am I seeing at the playground? Where are they coming from? Sort of slowing down our process and genuinely trying to connect, just finding the part of you that wants to have that sort of human connection. I feel as if part of, for Parenting Village, part of what we wish to do is shift the cultural fabric here so that we can understand, we make space for what's honest and true in parenthood. Parenthood is a tough gig. It is not really an easy gig.
You're talking to a guy whose son had his first sleepover last night at our house. So I'm a little on the less sleep side.
How did that go?
Overall, great. But is it ever seamless?
Never. Never.
So I'm with you.
Yeah. I mean, I think we find different ages and stages challenge us as parents. And who knows, maybe it's babyhood, maybe it's toddlerhood or teenagehood. But there's something in it for all of us that is a struggle. And if we can make spaces where we're truly allowed to talk about that together, to be honest and vulnerable and say, you know, this is hard in this way for me, and we can receive other people's vulnerability. I wish I could give you this sort of practical, we could do X, Y, and Z in a very practical way. You know, I think more support groups, more programming, more social programming. Parenting Village has some peer supports for folks who just transitioned into parenthood. So definitely more programming, but there's almost just this, I think, a shifting, a slowing down, a human contact. Social media helps us feel connected in lots of ways, but I think the virtual nature of those connections also lets us hide in ways and sort of presumes a connection that's not necessarily there, and we can sometimes say nasty things when we're behind a computer screen. So I feel as if getting out there in the community and making real human connections with each other is so valuable.
ParentingVillage.org is where you can learn more about what Parenting Village is. And when you say, Emily, that you're talking about being more communicative with other parents, being more supportive, being more present, and sort of, we've talked on the show recently about being present in a lot of different ways, not just in parenting. But I don't hear that as an endorsement that we have to helicopter, you know, our own kids and other kids. That's not what I'm hearing from you, right?
No. You know, there are lots of times if I see something happening, like if I see a kid climbing and I think it's not safe, I know the parent, I don't know them, but I might know who the parent is on the playground, I might say, hey, are you okay with what's happening? Like, can I help? You know, you can check in with each other. If I offend somebody, I hope I don't. But I think there's ways to be honest, sort of, hey, that would make me nervous if I were you, but are you cool with that? Is your kiddo good at climbing, you know? So I think there's ways to, we all have our different style. Some of us might be a little closer. Some of us might be more distant from our kids and let them kind of experience their consequences more thoroughly. But I think there's ways to interact that is respectful of each other and honoring of connection.
Okay. Sally, what do you think?
I feel like it's just terrifically important that we are empathetic with each other. And that's something, as Emily said, that it's easy to lack when we have the distance of the computer screen, particularly when we're looking at something that's going on. And the in-person interactions are what enable us to have a sense of vulnerability with each other and a place where we can accept the vulnerability of others and also accept the vulnerability that we ourselves have with our children. And I think, too, that it's that judgment is convenient because it's a way to create mental distance from something that happens, to be able to say, like, I'm judging you because you should never have done that and that never would have happened. And so nothing like that could ever happen to me because I'm not that parent. When in truth, if you sit and think about the things that happen empathetically, you can think, okay, well, maybe my child wouldn't have done that exact thing. But there have to be times where, in hindsight, you thought that could have ended badly. And I'm glad it didn't end badly.
Mm-hmm. Patrick, what do you think?
I definitely agree with you two. I think the one thing I would add is, I think actually you mentioned it, you never know where anybody's coming from.
Yes.
You don't know what sort of situation they're in, whether they haven't slept in 3 days, whether they've, for me, I work with a lot of postpartum depression, whether they're kind of going through that sort of thing. And that can totally change your brain chemistry, change your awareness of your surroundings. So being able to ask politely if the where the person is, or if they need any assistance or help, or if they're okay with what's going on.
And Sarah, let me ask you, sort of in the same spirit that we actually emailed before the program began, and you had said that you not only are concerned with all of the judging or the lack of empathy for parents, but even in day-to-day situations, we may have a well-intended idea that ends up just making parents sort of feel worse. And before the program began, we talked about the fact that the New York State Senate passed a bill again this year. They seem to pass this every year. It passes the Senate. It doesn't go anywhere else. That would make it against the law for any child under the age of 8 to be left in any car for any length of time anywhere.
Right.
You know, we're not talking 90-degree days. We're not talking really frigid days. We're talking any car at any point, your own driveway, the store. And the New York Senate passed that unanimously. And they said, well, they're just looking out for the kids. I mean, I guess it makes me a criminal, you know. And you had mentioned the judgment that parents can get. And again, I'm not saying all parents who leave any kid in any car in any circumstance, that's totally cool. What I'm saying is, are we ready to judge harshly too quickly?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, the most holy time of my day is when both of my small children fall asleep in the car because they are quiet and I can do something. But let's say I get home and I park my car and I put my parking brake on and I go inside to get a drink or go to the bathroom, and I'm in fear the whole time that I do this, that my neighbors are going to call the police or that someone's going to notice. And, you know, what if something happened and the parking brake released and the car rolled backwards? And I just have these fears and I have to kind of squelch them just to pee, you know? Yeah, it's like, okay. And the other day I was coming out of my house in such an incident. I'd been in the house for maybe 10 minutes and there was a police officer at the cross street and I was panicked. I was like, oh my gosh, that police officer is here for me. I left my children in the car and I'm doomed. And he just turned right and went away because he wasn't there for me. But the fact that I have to be in such fear in these situations to me is just ridiculous. My kids were perfectly safe. I had, you know, they were air conditioned, they were okay. It's sad that we have to be in a place where that's the level of fear we experience for wonderful car naps.
Well, listeners, as we continue to broaden the conversation on parenting, supporting parents in different ways, if you have your own experiences or thoughts to share, we'd like to hear from you. It's toll-free, 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI, 263-9994 if you're in Rochester. You can find us on Twitter, at Evan Dawson on Twitter, or MMAC Media on Twitter. That's Megan Mack, the producer of the program. You can always email me as well, and we'll be communicating with you in various ways. I want to listen to a clip from Amy Schumer's show. Amy Schumer tackled the way we kind of make moms feel a little rough sometimes. Here is the concept. This is from her show Inside Amy Schumer on Comedy Central last month. And the clip is, in this particular sketch, there's four pregnant women, and they're all discussing their birth plans. But the underlying thread is, if any pregnant woman ever thinks about themselves, they are terrible moms to be, because you can only think about the baby to be, and you have to do everything in your power to make sure everything is for them. So anyway, listen to how the conversation goes among the moms.
My midwife suggested a sea turtle birth.
What is that?
Oh, it's when you give birth on a beach and you dig a small hole and you kick sand on the baby and you see if it crawls into the ocean or into your arms.
Wow.
It's better for the baby.
You know what? I would be careful, though, with a midwife. Even though they're not technically doctors, they still have some medical training.
And close enough.
I just don't trust Western medicine at this point. That's why I'm having my baby on the highest mountaintop in Tibet, as far from real medical help as is humanly possible.
Oh,
so smart.
My doula's a Sherpa.
Oh, my doula is a 3-month-old baby, so she, like, gets it.
There's no better doula than a 3-month-old baby, because they were just there, right, Patrick?
They've been there. We're too far.
You're too far.
We're too far away.
So in this case, I don't see this as attacking the idea of a doula. I see this as attacking the idea that if you're having a conversation with someone about their birth plan, you got to pigeonhole them into making the hardest, most difficult choices and make them feel terrible if it doesn't conform to how you think they should do it. And you're nodding. I mean,
or how it ends up happening. Just because you have a birth plan doesn't mean everything on the birth plan is going to happen. and to be able to accept that a little bit, like accept going in that maybe not everything is going to go the way you want it to be, is, I think, mentally is a lot more satisfying at the end of the birth for the client.
All right, so I'll say again, and by the way, Patrick, you're such a gentle guy. I'm gonna stick that mic in your face so I can hear you. But there you go, that's better. We had a birth doula who was wonderful, and when friends have asked about it, I say it was a remarkable experience having that support and that help. But I've never found myself thinking, I've got to tell them, you must do this. It's the only right way. You try to share and support. And of course, I think, well, of course you should have a doula. But, I would never try to make someone feel badly about the choices they're making. And I wonder, why do you think we tend to do that here? Why this sketch gets traction because apparently people are feeling that pressure or that judgment. Why are we doing that?
Well, with the sketch, I think also it's kind of tying into a lot of the fad stuff that goes through. There's a lot of fads in birth and things like that that go through, like when they were talking about the sea turtle.
I don't think that was a real thing, though, right? The sea turtle birth? Okay.
I'd hope not. Sorry, what was the question?
Well, I'm just wondering, though, but why do we make people feel badly, though? Okay. I mean, why does that pressure happen?
I think we definitely put our expectations on other people instead of letting them have their own expectations. Whether it's a planned cesarean or they want to do a home birth with a doula and a midwife and no drugs and anything like that, those are both, very valid options. Each one has positives and negatives, and you kind of weigh your own positives and negatives and what's important to you, and you pick what's best for you.
Go ahead.
We live in a culture that, at least in terms of things that are widely discussed, it tends to be very black and white. And I feel like parenthood will crack you open and make you accept all of the gray areas that exist, or you will be miserable. So those are your options.
Well said. Really well said. I feel like there's a way in which, I don't mean to keep harping on social media because it's a brilliant, incredible tool. And there's something about the way that our choices are all on display and sort of how privacy even has shifted. And so I think our choices, in certain ways, we feel them on display. Or certainly, I'd say in the past maybe 10 to 15 years, parenting philosophy, sort of child-focused child rearing and parenting philosophies have become a really strong emphasis in the media, sort of in community dialogues. I think even when, I was pregnant with my daughter ten years ago, it was really different than it was when I had my son. I think that your choices are on display and people make meaning out of them. And so, if I had my son, he was born at home, and I felt really nervous to share that with people because, some people it was a great choice for us. It worked well for us, but people judged it. People believed we were making a really unsafe decision. And, I felt like the meaning that they would make of me as a person and how they saw me, that I worried, extended breastfeeding, similar things. I felt proud of these choices. They felt in line with who I am and what I believe. And I know that in the community, if people have different beliefs, they're going to make meaning out of those choices and sort of pigeonhole me in a certain way, see me in a certain way. And I think, the advent of Facebook and all these other sort of social media strategies, we have more access to information about each other and more spaces to comment, really.
And Emily, I think to piggyback off of that, social media, which I love, also gives us this sense of entitlement and like we are the wise ones, where I can on my Facebook page post the stories I think you should read and the things that would be good for you to know. It's like, I like them, but at some point it starts becoming, that's when I know I need to take a break. It's when I'm like, oh, my people will want to see this. Like, oh no, we've gone too far down the rabbit hole. You need to take a step back here, because we post and we comment and we say things like, we're educating them. We're the teachers of the world now because we have a platform and we have followers, so let them hear our opinions and let us guide them.
Tim and Aranda, we're going to get you in just a second, and I'll start taking your phone calls in a second. But just to sort of close the loop on the question on sort of birth and doulas, et cetera. I mean, if you saw the Amy Schumer sketch to its conclusion, the fourth woman says, they say, well, what are you doing? And she says, I don't know, like when I go into labor, I'll probably go to the hospital and do what the doctor tells me. And they're all like, what are you doing? How dare you? You know, I won't even give away the full punchline, but you can probably find it online. But, you know, clearly I think people like Patrick and the organization, which is the Doula Cooperative of Rochester,
correct,
does view certain aspects or at least certain approaches as being potentially healthy, potentially leading to better outcomes. When we say better outcomes, we know that the medical community has recognized they want fewer C-sections in this country. Not that C-sections are bad, not that if you've had a C-section, it's bad, but they know that right now we're probably doing a little too much of it. And so you guys have something coming up called a birth rally on September 5th.
Yes.
And that is, it's the third annual Improving Birth Rally.
Correct.
On September 5th. And then some moms will hear that and they'll say, improving birth, like it wasn't, you know, they're going to feel judged just based on the name. So why don't you tell me what the purpose and the goal is?
So the Improving Birth Rally, this is the third year. It's from an organization called Improving Birth. And it's more about getting people together, getting a community together that are interested in birth, whether you're a parent, a provider, even family members. You know, birth affects everybody. You know, we were all born. Many people will have children. And so what we're doing is we're bringing awareness of options and improving birth outcomes. So depending on the type of birth you want, knowing that there are other options. So if you say, well, the only option I've ever seen in the media, on television, in movies, is this woman screaming her brains out on her back in a hospital with five doctors standing over her telling her what to do, you don't know that there's other options. Whether that's you have a doula, you have a home birth, you have that birth if that's the birth you want. Raising informed consent, you know, having your doctor or your provider telling you what they're going to do and waiting for your response, not saying, I'm going to do this, and then just do it.
You know, asking permission, not just permission. Telling you. Yes, it's because your body. They're doing it too.
Exactly. It's your body. You need to have the final say on what happens. And so the rally is about improving awareness in the community.
Who do you want to attend the rally?
Everybody. Anybody can come. Anybody that feels that birth has a place to go, that we can do better. We do very well now, but even the statistics show that our country, in terms of birth outcomes, is not as good as many, many other countries.
Okay, and that's September 5th.
September 5th.
And the rally's where?
Highland Park, right in front of the conservatory.
And what time?
10 a.m.
All right, so if you want to attend, there you go, if you want to mark your calendar for that. And let me grab a phone call. Tim in Arundel has been waiting to weigh in. Go ahead, Tim. Yep.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just want to alert you to an article in the June issue of Reader's Digest, child abuse. It's flat from 10 years ago. The actual reportings are up 30%. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to cite one article about it for you. A mom had her son in the car. She forgot his winter jacket, went back to her self-employed office, ran in for a minute, came back out, and it was a cop there. He called Child Protective Services. The child was taken away for months. They had to hire a lawyer, thousands of dollars. People wouldn't talk to her because they assumed she did something wrong. She eventually got the child back, but it was a nightmare. The child is obviously traumatized. So the next time you got to go to the bathroom, I would take your son out of the car. Don't do it. Too dangerous. And read that article. You're going to find something that will disturb you.
Well, Tim, thank you for the phone call. What do you think about that, Sarah?
I know, it's simply frightening. And I actually have a friend who told me that she used to let her kids walk to the playground, like around the corner from their house, and they had they had people contact the police about it, and they had to have Child Protective Service come, and they had to sign papers that they would agree to not allow their children to go to the playground, and that they had to, like, kind of sign. They had no choice. They said, if you don't sign these papers today, we're taking your children.
See, this is what drives me sort of nuts, because I know that the older we get, the more of us there are that are saying, well, when I was growing up, you know, we used to go out in the morning and mom would say, come back for dinner. And that was sort of true for me. Mm-hmm. But why in that case, if you notice a young child or two young children and they're alone and if you're concerned, I'm not upset with people who are worried about that. I mean, to the point of that Emily and Sally have made about being willing to step in and maybe just
walk the children home if you're concerned.
Or just say, hey, what's going on? I noticed you guys walking. Yeah. You know, I just want to make sure everything's cool.
Yeah.
And if we find out those children are sort of neglected, that's one thing. But if we find out, my parents let me walk, you talk to the, if the police get involved, they talk to the parents. Parents say, we're trying to build independence. This is the plan. Then why are we going to the point where some parents get charges pressed on them?
I think that what you're saying now, too, speaks to a really deep risk with helicopter parenting, and that is that these kids are going to grow up and they won't have ever developed a sense of self-efficacy or independence. And to me, that's a bigger risk for my son than the small risks that I take by letting him, be in the backyard while I'm in the kitchen, but I'm not in the backyard with him. Things that some people find horrifying. I feel like, but I want him to grow up to be the kind of adult who can do things independently and who believes in himself. And if I'm always holding his hand every single moment of the day, he can't grow into that person.
Yeah, I mean, I relate to that. And then before I get to our only break of the hour, let me read an email from a listener who brings up an incident that illustrates just how quick things can happen with children. And my friend Adam is on vacation. But Adam Chodak, who you might know as a main anchor at WROC-TV, former colleague of mine over at 13WHAM, his young son is a good friend of my young son. And there was a day where Adam and his young son, they were having a day at the Strong Museum of Play. This was a particular day in which somebody had set up what's the name of these? I forget the concept, the name of the sheet, but you build all day with dominoes going in every direction, and one ball comes down a chute and it touches another ball.
Rube Goldberg.
A Rube Goldberg device, yes. So there was going to be a 3 p.m. display of the Rube Goldberg thing. They had advertised it. They had been on the morning news. And so Adam and his son had been there. They'd had lunch. They're getting ready to leave. They go to the bathroom there. This is like 1 o'clock. His son comes flying out of the bathroom. Adam is washing his hands, and he's going, slow down, buddy. His son is flying out the door. Adam tries to catch up with him, and he realizes he is going to jump the rope, and that Rube Goldberg setup, which hasn't fully been completed yet, is just prone to a three-year-old. He does. He gets over the rope. He sets it off, and no one is there but Adam and his son and one stunned Strong Museum of Play staff worker watching everything go in all the directions. And it was just jaw on the floor, and Adam just said, oh my gosh, is there anything we can do? And the person looked at him and they said, no.
Oh no.
It's too late. It's over. And Adam said, all right, buddy, let's go home. And so, that night we went out to dinner with some friends who literally didn't know that happened. And they said, yeah, we went to the Strong Museum of Play. And, the kind of the Rube Goldberg thing was a little bit of a letdown. They did some stuff, but it wasn't all that elaborate. And I said, I can tell you why. That's a true story. Really amazing. And a listener emails to say, that's just a reminder, that wasn't jumping into a gorilla enclosure. No one's life was in danger here. Mm-hmm. But that was a moment that Adam wasn't doing a poor job parenting. They're washing their hands in the bathroom, and your fast kid sprints out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he gets 30 feet in front of you, and something happens. So it's a great reminder. And that's a funny story. The gorilla story is not funny. The gorilla story is a reminder that things can happen. But I appreciate the reminder that things do happen. And Adam, when you come back from vacation, you can call the program and just remind us that, he's got a sense of humor about it, too. So Adam is a wonderful dad, and he would not mind me sharing the story. Let's get our only break of the hour. We're going to come back and talk about another aspect of parenting that gets judged a lot. And what I find really interesting is when it comes to breastfeeding, those who do get judged, especially if you're in public, and those who don't get judged. And I want to talk to Sally and the panel about that and more. So let's take our only break and come back with your phone calls and questions as well next. Coming up in our second hour, we talk to Chef Samantha Baskis, one of the leading chefs in the Finger Lakes food industry. She's going to talk to us about her new restaurant, Kindred Fair in Geneva, and her career path, even her life path, from her native South Africa to the Finger Lakes. She'll tell us where she sees the food scene now and where she thinks it's going in the region. Next hour with Samantha Baskis. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our conversation this hour was sparked by that story out of the Cincinnati Zoo, the four-year-old boy, I think a three-year-old boy, who jumped into the gorilla enclosure, and the gorilla got a hold of him, and a zoo worker decided the boy's life was in danger, and they shot and killed the gorilla. It was a very sad story. Police investigated. They said, you know, there are no charges. You know, the mom was not neglectful. It happened in an instant. It was just very, very sad. But it led to a lot of backlash, even death threats for the mom. We're talking about the way we judge parents and judge as opposed to support. How can we do a better job of maybe not judging but supporting? It doesn't mean there aren't sort of better approaches or outcomes or more effective approaches or outcomes, but how do we create a culture that's more supportive of parents? And so my guests come at this from a number of different perspectives, and they're helping lead that discussion. And I'll reintroduce them now. Sarah Treadwell's here. She's a mom. She's a spiritual healer. And she's also, what's the program
you
have?
So I started a project on Facebook. It's called Boobs for Babies. And the premise is to gather stories from women who have been breastfeeding to share with other moms in an ebook, so we can have kind of a place to share. People can read it and learn about what to expect, things they've been through, and kind of just how that journey can go. And the best success rate for breastfeeding is just having the knowledge of what to expect or what's going to happen, so that when you come up across an issue, you don't feel alone, you don't feel lost, you don't feel like you did something wrong. And those are things that people do often make people, women feel, is that they're doing something wrong. In the hospital, I was told that I probably wouldn't have success breastfeeding because my breasts were too small. I mean, it's just, I said, I knew that that wasn't true.
That's not even science.
But if it was by the lactation consultant who came to visit me. I knew already that wasn't true, so I just let her go. I just dismissed it. But a new mom who was already insecure, that would have been a really big blow for her. And they are. And women face statements like that that are that and far worse all the time. So Boobs for Babies, you can find it on Facebook. It's just a page where women can come together. And we're looking for submissions right now for women who want to share their story with other moms and help them to have success with breastfeeding and normalize it.
Okay, so that's Sarah Treadwell. Patrick Boswell, I've been talking to as not only a birth doula, member of the Doula Cooperative of Rochester. You can learn more at doulacooperative.com. But also, your day-to-day job is what?
I'm a full-time acupuncturist and massage therapist, and I have a private practice in Greece where I focus on women's health, fertility, pregnancy, labor delivery, postpartum, pediatric, everything like that.
You work with a lot of moms and a lot of different...
A lot of moms, yeah.
Yeah. Emily Horowitz is here. She is a psychotherapist, practitioner, and supervisor, and the founder of Parenting Village, parentingvillage.org, for more on that. And Sally Parrott-Ashbrook is a mom and a board-certified lactation consultant at Nourish Breastfeeding Support, which is where?
NourishBreastfeeding.com.
Okay. And, you know, you just heard Sarah talking about some of what women will encounter with breastfeeding. And you talk about a place where women can be judged, where moms can be judged.
No matter what choice they make,
no matter what choice they make, yeah.
Yes.
And, you know, I know part of your work is helping them feel that support. Well, why don't you tell us about that? How you approach your work with new moms?
Sure. One of the primary things that I tell moms is that my office is a judgment-free zone. I'm focused on what their goals are, and I do not have goals for them. So we work starting with where they are, and we accept the fact that sometimes that's not going to be the ideal situation of a woman breastfeeding a baby with a ray of light shining down on her in a field. and I find that we can create these pockets of support. We have a free weekly breastfeeding support group on Friday afternoons. And women come in and they're going through hard times, and the other women in the group, whether or not they have experienced those specific issues, know it can be hard. Breastfeeding is not always easy, and they can provide support to one another as they're as they're going through whatever issues they're facing and making whatever decisions they need to make about feeding their babies. The number one rule is feed the baby. And that's what sometimes I have to tell mom, they don't, even moms who need to be supplementing, they're not supplementing, and I say, you have to feed your baby.
Yeah.
this is the thing that has to happen.
Well, and let me ask you, Sally, I'm an evidence guy. I try to digest as much evidence, medical evidence, scientific evidence, studies, etc. And studies I read find that breastfeeding for the child and for the mom is better in certain aspects of health.
Yes, definitely. And
better doesn't mean formula is terrible or bad or evil or you're a bad parent or there's nothing good that would come. I mean, like, no. It just, what we know is breastfeeding does have better outcomes in certain aspects for mom and child. The interesting study that I had never seen done before that was published in 2014 out of, I think, Ohio State, this group looked at children in the same families. So a family where there was a child who was breastfed and a child who was formula fed within the same family. And they found the outcomes much closer together. They found, so what the study author said was, you certainly can't say breastfeeding isn't overall, quote unquote, better or better in certain regards, but we have to be careful here because if we only tell new moms, you know, breastfeed, that'll take care of it. That doesn't offer enough support, especially for parents on socioeconomic struggles. Mm-hmm. Because mm-hmm. when we see that a child who is breastfed versus a child who's formula fed in the same family have very similar outcomes, not always exactly the same, but similar. They're not that far apart because they're probably eating the same things, that their nutrition's better. If they're in wealthier families, they tend to have better nutrition. They tend to have better educational support, better one-on-one family time, parent time, that those things matter, that parent support matter, that societal support matters, and that it's okay to say, you know, to especially to parents in socioeconomic struggles, if you formula feed, that's not the end of the world. We also need to find other support for you.
Yes, parenting is not a single issue at all. I would like to point out that study, people haven't looked at it very critically, but is comparing children who didn't breastfeed to children who breastfed any period of time, including one
okay.
day. So it's not it's not quite what people think it is.
Not
it's not the
favorite.
Baby
okay.
who ate to 18
not your favorite.
Months.
Okay, I get you.
Yeah.
But even still, that study didn't come out and say, look, it's the same. You know, the outcomes are the same. They didn't say that. But I think what the authors wanted to try to say was emphasize breastfeeding.
There's a whole picture.
Emphasize support.
Yes.
Help
yes.
parents, especially single moms.
Yes.
You know, all of those things.
Yes. I mean, this for me, this topic, what this brings up heartily is the fact that we do not have paid parental leave in the United States. 25% of women who give birth in the United States go back to work within 2 weeks of giving birth. And that is not an environment that is conducive either to maternal health or child health. So there are all these other issues, and that plays into whether they're able to breastfeed. So there are all these interrelated issues in the well-being of children and the well-being of moms, which matters too.
And we also know that the higher you are in socioeconomic stratus, you are more likely to breastfeed.
Yes.
You know, women in poverty having kids are less likely to breastfeed. And so maybe part of the goal is let's reduce poverty. You know, just another
yes.
reason to reduce poverty.
Right?
You know, it's all related to outcomes here. So how long have you been in practice?
I've been in practice for about 3 years.
Okay. We talk about not breastfeeding. How about women who breastfeed, and we see videos shared online of women, a woman breastfeeding in public and sitting on a park bench, and people, the things that people may say walking by. I've never seen it. I see these videos and I say, come on, no way. But it happens, doesn't it?
It does happen.
Hopefully not as often as I fear. But
yes, a lot of women tell me, well, the only thing I've ever had is somebody be supportive. And I think focusing too much on the bad instances can make women afraid to breastfeed or afraid to breastfeed in public. But they do happen. And one way that I like to reframe thinking about this is it's not a woman in breastfeeding in public. It's a baby eating in public. So it's not about the mom gratifying herself in some way, although her breasts will get very full and painful if she doesn't nurse. It's about the baby getting nutrition when the baby needs nutrition. And that's as simple as it is, frankly, for me.
I have a family member now who has an infant, and she's just so comfortable with breastfeeding, and I just admire her. You know, it's not sort of ostentatious. It's just functional. That's just feeding a child, right?
And that comes in time, too. The very first time she nursed her baby in public, maybe she was like that, but there are a lot of moms where, and there's this adjustment period where they're getting used to the fact that they need to do this and that that they may experience judgment from people.
And the babies help with that because oftentimes, you know, a newborn, you can have a nice cover and you're sitting there and you don't really know what you're doing, but you have this, you know, you're all covered up and no one can see anything and people don't even notice. But as the child grows, they start pulling the cover off and they won't let you do that anymore. And they're like, I want to see the world. And then the mom has no choice but to be exposed in that way that they can't cover up more as people want them to.
But we can have a choice to not overly sexualize everything.
Yes. Surely we can. We can have a choice when we're uncomfortable with a choice that someone else is making. We have a choice to leave. You know, we have a choice to look away.
If you feel
uncomfortable with somebody breastfeeding, you know, I'm not okay. Like, that's okay that you don't feel comfortable with that. If you, for whatever reason, sort of hold some judgment around it, I can't judge your judgment. That's not particularly useful. But you can choose to walk away. You can choose to make yourself comfortable. We don't need to sort of be angry and ask other people to make themselves uncomfortable in order for you to be comfortable.
I think that we have a fundamental issue in our culture where our culture as a whole believes we own women's bodies in general, but we own women's bodies especially when they are pregnant and when they have had a baby. And so it's the same way that people think they can walk up to you and touch your belly while you're pregnant, and that's really an unacceptable thing to do. Similarly, I think that they can comment on things like how you're choosing to feed your baby, when really that's between the mom and the baby. It doesn't have anything to do with you. And it's like, when I see a man in a Speedo, I don't find that pleasant, but I don't comment to him about how I feel about his Speedo. I just avert my eyes. It's that simple.
And the whole touching a pregnant woman's belly is something I can't even think of myself ever wanting to do that. But I have a friend who, in her day-to-day work, interacts with a lot of customers. And she says it's amazing how many customers just think they'll just walk right up to you. Now, maybe they develop a relationship. They feel like they know you. But still, they're touching your body. And that just seems a little strange. I didn't actually, again, as the guy, you know how often I consider those things? I have the privilege of not having to worry about that.
Yeah.
But hearing it from her perspective was helpful. Before we go, Amanda, a listener named Amanda sent an email and just said, essentially said, it's not helpful that one of the leading presidential contenders thinks breastfeeding is disgusting. I assume she's talking about Donald Trump. I have not heard what Donald Trump, I don't recall exactly what he might have said. I don't want to...
Can we just not talk about Donald Trump?
We can't do it.
That'd be great.
But I don't think he called breastfeeding disgusting.
I think he said something.
I
feel like even if it wasn't necessarily specifically about breastfeeding, I think we can sort of pivot away from that candidate who we may all feel challenged by around this table, but talk about the culture right now in general of judgment, right? Of separation.
So Amanda, your email, we're pivoting, but there you go.
Well, we hear you. I mean, it doesn't help to have in media coverage around us constantly. It doesn't help to have a sense of otherness and fear
and these
judgment.
Fake mommy wars.
Yeah.
Did you see the photo of the woman breastfeeding her child in the mall in front of a Victoria's Secret blow up?
Yes.
I did not. Yeah.
And she's like, come on. You know, how are you going to, if anyone said anything, how are you going to argue with this?
Well, let me read one more listener comment from Amy. She says, loving all the knowledge from Parenting Village on Evan Dawson's show. Can't wait for the summer bash. So there's a good opening there. Emily,
yay.
What's the summer bash?
Oh, I'm so glad. It just warms my heart to hear that. So the summer bash, this is our fourth annual bash. We have over 1,000 people every year. It keeps growing and growing. And it's a time when parents can come together and have a really great a family festival that's specifically geared towards them. So local businesses and organizations that provide some sort of service to families in general come, and they offer an activity table for children. We have little mini classes and food trucks. It is awesome. It is such a great event where people come and gather. They learn about the incredible family resources in our community. There's a lot here, but it's kind of spread out. It's not always easy to find. They can connect with each other and really get a sense of that, a taste of the village. We also have ongoing programs. Every week we have support groups. We have two of them going now, one specifically targeting people called Out of the Blue who are struggling with depression and anxiety, and one for people with babies and toddlers. So this is kind of a time to really just a once a year event where everybody comes and gathers together and gets to know a little bit more about who we are and what we do and what is in the community.
So when, where?
So it is on Sunday, July 31st from 2 to 6 at Rothfuss Park in Penfield. You'll find information on Facebook. We have incredible sponsors. It's a really great fun event.
Rothfuss Park is on, is it 250? I'm trying to remember.
It's 1648 Five Mile Line Road.
Oh, Five Mile Line Road.
In Penfield. Five Mile,
so that's Rothfuss Park. That is Sunday, July 31st, 2 to 6.
Yep.
That's right. Yeah. For the bash there. If you missed it earlier, the Rally to Improve Birth is September 5th.
September 5th.
And that is a Monday?
It is. It's on Labor Day.
It's on Labor. Oh,
that's
I see
why we
what
did
you've
that.
Labor on Labor Day. That is, so mark your calendar for Labor Day if you want to check that out. And that is where?
That is at Highland Park right in front of the conservatory.
Starts at 10 a.m.
Okay.
Can I throw out one additional
Absolutely.
Thing, too? Since we're talking about online spaces largely, I do think that the value of online spaces can be finding these pockets of support. So we have one for Rochester called Breastfeeding Mamas Rock, R-O-C, on Facebook. So if you are a breastfeeding mom, come join us.
Are you both on Facebook with the groups right there?
So
do that again one more time.
Breastfeeding Mamas Rock, R-O-C. Just search for the group on Facebook. It'll pop up, and we're a good support location.
And okay. Boobs for Babies, accepting submissions.
Submissions and stories on your experience with it.
Yes.
To all of you, for your thoughts on how parents can feel more support, a little less judgment, thank you for sharing your experience with us this hour. It's great having you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
You.
And short break, much more connections straight ahead.